NAACP with the Advisory Committee for Minority Veterans, which is part of the Center for Minority Veterans, yeah. Yeah, we gotta deal with them on that.
All right.
MOU, yeah.
Bubba, you ready?
Yep.
All right, team, let's call the meeting to order. Go ahead and we will do our Pledge of Allegiance, please. Ben, would you lead us in the pledge, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This is kind of new, right? This is new back here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they recently wasn't here last time, but that was 20 years ago. So.
Really? All right, let's do a roll call.
John Burek.
Present.
Eric Dwayne.
Present.
Alexis Federico.
Excused.
Alex Maslin.
Excused also.
Robert McDonald.
Excused. No, I'm here.
Michael Radigan. Stephen Vargas.
Here.
And Stephanie Wade.
Present.
And we have a quorum.
I was trying to get a quorum with excuse, man.
Quorum established. 1507. All right. This time we'll do public comments. Anybody from the audience, if you'd like to come up and speak, please feel free to come to the mic. John, you want to explain your case? Yeah, please come on up.
If I can have him fill out a public comment form really quick before he speaks.
Sure.
Yes, hi, I'm Jose Ulloa, resident of Fullerton, California, a veteran, and I recently received a letter rejecting my request to be admitted to medical under the VA based on the fact that my income is too high. I find it kind of interesting that when I got drafted, I didn't ask what my future income was going to be, or maybe I wouldn't have been drafted. I don't know. And again, I don't know if this is a forum to talk about this, but I'd like to kind of follow through on that and find out why I'm being rejected based on my income. You know, I'm on Social Security, but I have to pay supplemental medical insurance to cover things. My cost of medication is going up. I need hearing aids, and they're $8,000, you know, just to get those replaced. And the other thing that bothered me is just recently in the news that I heard that a lot of the money, or some of the money, or a big portion of the money, is being siphoned from the VA to help illegal aliens as far as their medical coverage. Now, I have nothing against illegal immigrants personally, or legal immigrants more so, because I am one. I was born in Mexico City. My parents brought me here legally in 1945. I served our country, so you can't tell me I don't like immigrants, okay? so that's it. I'm just trying to figure out what my next steps would be to kind of find out how I can get on medical with the VA. Yes, sir.
What was your name, sir?
Jose, J-O-S-E.
Same?
U-L-L-O-A.
Whoa. So Jose, thank you for speaking. We're gonna have you fill out a card with Monica.
Okay.
And then, so we have rules in place, the Brown Act, where if it's not on the agenda, we can't really address it.
Sure,
we can
I
have
understand.
Someone from staff follow up with you.
Okay, good.
I appreciate
and
that.
And like I said, I can leave a copy of the letter I got if you guys would like.
Sure. So just for context, 2003, the Veterans Administration made a determination about income levels, so that's what Jose's up against. So we'll have staff do a follow up with him if that's okay. All right. Any others come to speak under matters from the audience?
No,
seeing none, we'll go ahead and close matters from the audience. All right. Presentations. John.
Just a quick reminder, if everybody can unmute their microphones.
I think we already have.
Okay.
Is this on? Okay.
So, John, since this is a refresher, how did I do on that first test?
Excellent.
Okay.
Excellent.
Thank you. So I see a lot of familiar faces, and this will be overview for most of you, but it's good to get a little refresher recollection. My name is John Cleveland. I work for the County Council's office. We're going to talk about the Brown Act basics, focus a little bit on standing and ad hoc committees, because that's come up for a lot of the county's BCCs, meetings and agenda rules, what happens when the Brown Act's violated, public participation, a little bit about general BCC concepts, and then some specific points on your recently approved bylaws. So, as you know, the Brown Act is designed to facilitate open and public participation in government, and the basic rule is that meetings of legislative bodies like this council's must be open and public, and the purpose is to facilitate public participation in government and to enable the public to be informed and curb the potential misuse of the democratic process. There's two key concepts and definitions in the Brown Act. The first is legislative body, and the second is local agency. A legislative body includes commissions, committees, boards, and councils created by formal action of a legislative body, and local agencies include counties and boards, commissions, councils, and agencies thereof. There's an exception. First, let me talk about standing committee. So a standing committee of a legislative body is subject to the Brown Act, and a standing committee that has continuing subject matter jurisdiction or meeting schedule fixed by charter, resolution, or formal action of the legislative body is a standing committee that is subject to the Brown Act. So let me ask you a quick question. If the standing committee is composed of less than a quorum of the governing body, is it still subject to the Brown Act?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, it is, because any fixed committee is subject to the Brown Act, regardless of whether it's comprised of less than a quorum. And that brings us to the ad hoc committee or temporary committee exception to the Brown Act. Temporary committees or ad hoc committees comprised solely of the members of the legislative body that are less than a quorum are not subject to the Brown Act. But here's the caveats. The temporary committee needs to serve a limited purpose, not be perpetual, and be dissolved once the specific task is completed. Question. If the legislative body creates an ad hoc committee that states that the ad hoc will not have continuing jurisdiction, but the ad hoc actually exercises continuing subject matter jurisdiction and is not limited in time, is the ad hoc committee subject to the Brown Act's requirements?
Yes.
Yes. Substance controls over form. So let's look at the definition of meetings. A meeting is any congregation of the majority of the members of the legislative body at the same time and location to hear, discuss, deliberate, or take action on any item within the subject matter jurisdiction of the legislative body. The meeting includes gatherings where members discuss matters within the subject matter jurisdiction of the body, and that includes meals, social events, not just situations where votes are taken. So this could potentially apply in a restaurant setting. If everyone goes out to lunch after the meeting, you wouldn't want to gather together and risk discussing matters that are within the subject matter jurisdiction of your body. So let's talk about serial meetings. This is a concept that can maybe trip you up, and you have to watch out and be careful about it. A majority of the members of the legislative body shall not, outside of a meeting authorized by this chapter, use a series of communications of any kind, directly or through intermediaries, to discuss, deliberate, or take action on any item of business within the subject matter jurisdiction of the body. This can take the form of a hub-and-spoke scenario or a daisy-chain scenario. We're going to talk a little bit more about how serial communications can inadvertently occur and what to watch out for. But here's a quick exception. One-way briefings, particularly involving staff briefing the legislative body, are permitted. The prohibition on serial meetings does not apply when there's separate conversations or communications with staff or with individual members of the legislative body, provided those individual communications aren't designed to convey the positions or votes of each of the members in a serial fashion. Serial meetings are prohibited even when using electronic communications. And here's another pop quiz for you. When can a serial meeting occur? When replying all to an email message, discussing an issue in an internet chat room, posting a like on social media platform, discussing an issue on a platform that features messages that are only temporary and disappear shortly after creation, or using a member's AI robot to communicate the member's position on an issue that falls within the subject matter jurisdiction of that member's legislative body to other members of the legislative body. Or F, all of the above.
F, all of the above.
All right, yeah, you guys got it. The one to really watch out for is replying all to an email message. This happens pretty frequently. If everyone's on a group email and someone inadvertently replies all, that can be a discussion.
We're going to have to, if you come over to my house and you say something, then Siri chimes in and says, yes, Mr. Vargas, your last reaction to that question was, Siri or Alexis, they'll be ratting you out.
Yeah. New things to consider. So there's six narrow exceptions to the definition of a meeting. These are high level and they're fact specific, they're nuanced, and I'd encourage you to contact staff and me if you think any of them may apply to you. But this is just a heads up. I want to let you know that individual contacts or conversations between members of a legislative body and any other person may not constitute a meeting. Attending conferences that are also open to the public and address issues of general matters of general concern are not necessarily a meeting. Similarly, community meetings open to the public, meetings of another local agency such as the city council, purely social or ceremonial occasions, and attendance at open and notice standing committee meetings of your own legislative body are all potential exceptions to the definition of meeting, provided that members attend only as observers and do not discuss issues within the subject matter jurisdiction of the legislative body. Also, let's talk about the regular meeting agenda and notice requirements. Each legislative body must provide an agenda that states the time and place for the location. For regular meetings, that agenda must be published 72 hours in advance and must contain a brief general description of each item of business that is to be transacted or discussed. That agenda should notify the public regarding what action is going to be taken. A cryptic little bullet point, a one or a couple of words, isn't really enough. You need to give the public a heads up that this is the type of action you're going to use with appropriate verbs. And except as otherwise properly noticed on the agenda, as you pointed out at the beginning of this meeting, action cannot be taken on any item of business. Yeah. There's also special meetings. I'm not going to spend too much time on this unless you tell me that you've engaged in special meetings, but these special meetings come up when matters of business are a little bit more urgent. The notice requirements are less. They are typically 24 hours. The same rules apply about agendizing matters. You have to properly agendize a matter in order for it to be discussed at a special meeting. And then there are emergency meetings, defined as a work stoppage, crippling activity, or other activity that severely impairs the public health, safety, or both. And those probably don't come up for you, so we'll just let you know about that under the Brown Act and move on. So these are some general Brown Act concepts about the public's right to participation in meetings. At all regular and special meetings, members of the public must have an opportunity to address the legislative body, not just on your agenda items, but on any item of interest appearing within your subject matter jurisdiction of a legislative body. So there's usually two opportunities for public comment, general public comment, and then each individual item. There's no secret ballots allowed under the Brown Act. Votes need to be public, and the legislative body shall publicly report out action taken or any abstention on any action of business. So this is a really frequent question. What happens when you're presented with an issue that you really want to take action on, but it's not on that agenda? What do you do? What exceptions are there out there for you? Well, there are certain very narrow exceptions, and the general rule is that no official business can be taken on non-agendized matters, but the legislative body can ask staff to come back with information. They can direct staff to put an item of business on a future agenda, provide a reference to other resources or factual information. So if something comes up, check yourself, try and maintain control, not discuss or deliberate. It's not just votes, it's discussion that's prohibited. and then get it on a future agenda so you can properly take action on it. So what happens when the Brown Act's violated? There are criminal penalties potentially available when a member intends to deprive the public of information, which the member knows or has reason to know the public is entitled to. But much more common are civil enforcement actions. A district attorney or any interested person can bring a civil action to invalidate or have something declared null and void. And attorney's fees are available to a prevailing party, and the risk of attorney's fees is a significant deterrent to violating the Brown Act in and of itself. So let's turn to just some general bylaws concepts that are applicable to all of the counties, boards, commissions, councils, committees. Basically, the bylaws are the rules of the road. They provide the functions, goals, authorities for your BCC to operate. And the Board of Supervisors, as this legislative body in charge of the county, approves those BCCs. And the BCCs provide a channel of input for the public to participate. BCCs generally serve as advisory bodies to the board as authorized in those bylaws. The bylaws describe the procedure for BCCs to advocate, work with the public, and the board directs the county's legislative efforts. And the board actually has a legislative platform that's governed, this led by the County Office of Legislative Affairs. So to the extent that your legislative body is interested in legislation, it's a good idea to coordinate with the CEO Office of Legislative Affairs and make sure that your efforts are in sync with and consistent with the county's legislative platform. So let's turn to a couple quick points on your specific bylaws. The purpose and functions of your legislative body are set forth in Article 3. You know them well, so I won't read over them, they involve promoting equal economic opportunity for Orange County veterans, keeping abreast, making recommendations to the county on legislation, promoting equal justice before the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs and California Department of Veteran Affairs, and receiving and hearing complaints and problems of veterans community and making recommendations when appropriate, reviewing and analyzing and recommending county projects and service priorities relating to veterans in Orange County, and disseminating information to the county on issues of concern to veterans within the county. The bylaws set out some of the points we have already covered in the Brown Act, such as your standing committees and how your ad hocs are created, and confirms that your ad hoc should be set out for time-limited tasks with less than a quorum of the overall legislative body. The bylaws also require compliance with the Brown Act and set out notice and agenda requirements that are consistent with what we already talked about. That concludes my presentation. Does anyone have any questions?
Go ahead, Stephanie.
I might be a bit of a dog with a bone on this one, but I have a couple of questions that I think are Brown Act related, and if not, I think they fall in your wheelhouse at any rate. On February 19th, I forwarded a flyer to Claudia, Renee Ramirez, Eric Ensley, the head of the Veterans Service Office. And my concern was the flyer I forwarded was a flyer for a DOD-funded study, a RAND study, that was being funded by the DOD to look into or soliciting volunteers who are LGBT veterans who are discharged from the military. And I asked that that be included in the county's VSO communication, the Big Voice. I was told, well, we need to consult with legal on that. My understanding, and I could be wrong, was that we could, and I know this from being on the in the past, on the events committee, was that we can forward communications from other government bodies. So municipal, county, state, and federal organizations. So was that something that needed to be run through legal? And then I might have a follow-up question about that.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And I should have prefaced my invitation for questions with a statement that anything that's really fact-specific or sensitive in nature, we should discuss offline outside of this public meeting. This wouldn't be the appropriate forum to necessarily provide detailed legal advice because it's in a public setting. We want to maintain the attorney-client privilege nature of those communications. So I suggest we do a little research. I don't have all of the facts in front of me on that specific flyer, but let's talk offline and get back to you.
To make it more general, am I correct in understanding that the general rule of thumb is that, OCVAC or the VSO can forward communications that come from other government bodies? Is that correct?
That's a pretty general statement, and I think that the concern for the county is that we're making sure that any events, we talked a little bit about social media. I'm looking at Mr. Radigan, I believe, even though you're John?
Correct.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Michael's not here.
Michael's here.
Okay. That basically we want to avoid promotions, or we have to be careful about private entities and things like that, so there's some vetting involved. So we should talk about the specifics, and I hate to just endorse that general statement at this point.
Okay, so let's. Our next meeting is May 8th. If you could follow up with Commissioner Wade, and we'll get a follow up on that.
Yeah,
does that sound good? All right, thank you.
May I ask a question?
Please.
Sure. I know we're talking about this, but our purview, our job, okay, our point is to keep the community, the Board of Supervisors, and the veterans community alert and involved and know, supposed to know what's going on from a communications and wherewithal situation in the county. That is one of those deals. Now, that throws us out if we have to go through every time we need to put something in, we have to go to you or somebody there to get to you, to get to us. That defeats the purpose of this organization. Just my thoughts.
Okay, so we'll get that added to Stephanie's comments, and you can address those later.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the comments.
John, I have a specific question. You mentioned Article 3, and one of the bullet points was economic opportunities for OC veterans, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we were looking at, and it came up before OCVAC previously last year, about having the veteran status given some points in regards to contracts, for example.
Yeah.
Is there what is the status of that? Is that not allowed?
I'm unfamiliar with that issue, and yeah. I guess I'm going to have to punt on that one also. We can do some research and look into that.
Okay. All right. So I'll write that up for also May 8th. And ask a specific question regarding that. Remember, recall our question that came from a gentleman that was looking for a little step up as far as contracting goes. You know, does he get some points because he's a veteran? Go ahead.
I was going to suggest, since we've been working on this for some time, I think Bobby's correct that it'd be great if OCVAC clarified its position in a letter. We've had the most success in getting attention from the supervisors when we've considered, had an ad hoc, written something up, and then proposed it to the Board of Supervisors. So, I mean, if you wanted to appoint an ad hoc on that, I'd gladly volunteer.
Let's wait to get some clarity from legal on May 8th, and then we'll do a follow-up on that. But I'll ask you to draft a letter, if you would.
Makes great sense.
All right.
One more thing, if I may, as a follow-up, because if we're not allowed to do it, then it means anything to CalVet or the Department of Labor or any of those groups or Department of Defense or the VA gives us some information on, then we're out of context.
We didn't say no. We said we'll get
I got it. I just wanted to make sure my point was clear.
Sure. All right, any other questions for John? All right, thank you so much, John.
Thank you.
All right, our next item is Executive Committee report from the chair, Alexis. Unfortunately, she cannot be here today, but I would just like to make a comment of it and hope that I could get support. Because this is our first time where we're actually going out in the community, right, and we hope to do each supervisory district, and our next one's in Dana Point, which is far. You guys are in the center of the county, and you're coming all the way up here to the north, and then you're going to go all the way to the south. I'd like to ensure that we wrap it up by 4 o'clock instead of 5 o'clock. I know we have a hard stop at 5, but we want to kind of be efficient so that we can get staff back at a reasonable time. Okay, without objection to that, we'll keep on moving forward, but that would be our goal, stated goal, including for other meetings that we have that are outside the normal Grand Street address.
Mr. Chair?
Sure.
Why don't we make it, instead of making it a hard stop at 4, because we may we would like to get over 4, but if we go over, we need to be able to have time to go over.
Shoot for a goal for 4 o'clock.
Okay, that's fine.
All right, without objection, we'll just keep on moving forward with that. That'll be our goal. All right, and our OCVSO update, Claudia?
Make sure this is on. There we go. Good afternoon. Yes, you can hear me. Thank you. And Stephen, I want to add to that one thing maybe to consider as we're considering the ending of the meetings is shifting those meeting times. Possibly it's something to think about in terms of maybe starting the meeting a little earlier if you're feeling like you're pressing for time to end, let's say, by 4. Because I know sometimes meetings, depending on how much items are on there to discuss, can go a little bit long. Just something to think about as well. So that you're not tied to like 3 to 4 and then constantly, as Bobby had mentioned, running a little bit late. So something to think about. Just want to say that. The other thing I wanted to update, thank you so much. Lots of busy work being done currently at the VSO. I want to extend a thank you to Stephen and Eric. During in meeting with our veteran service officer, Mr. Eric Ansley, and trying to address your goals and objectives for your ad hoc committee for the VSO metrics. So lots of fruitful discussions that went throughout those couple of meetings. One of the things that I did want to point out, and I'm glad that it was just the perfect timing, we had a Brown Act refresher, is on the reports that are included in the agenda packet. Understanding this was the first one, and correct me if I'm wrong, this was the first report that went into the agenda packet, so we hadn't had an opportunity to review the notes to make sure that we're all in line with all the members that were present. So I wanted to take this opportunity to just go over that report, and in your agenda packet is on page 7, I want to say, particularly to a couple of notes I wanted to, on behalf of the VSO, Eric Ensley, wanted to add a couple of edits given the limited time that we had before the agenda had to get posted. In order to comply, going back to the Brown Act, in order to make sure that we're abiding by that, prior to including any type of report, updates, meetings, notes on any type of ad hoc committee, it needs to be reviewed, edited, make sure that all the parties involved were included before we posted. So,
I'm sorry.
If
Claudia, so when you say all the parties involved, so that would be Eric and myself and
the ad hoc meeting members that were part of any meeting and or any county staff. So anyone that was part of that ad hoc discussion and or meeting. Given an opportunity to review any type of minutes or minutes that are going to be posted publicly in the agenda packet.
I think that's fair.
It's certainly fair.
Yes.
So Eric sent this out to myself and to Mr. Ensley. So,
yes.
And we had an opportunity to comment.
Perfect.
And
so
there wasn't enough time, though. I was asked for
it was
a report, short fuse.
Yeah. Sure.
And I produced one.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
And somebody
asked me for something.
I
yeah,
know.
I mean, there was no, you know, at the last meeting, there was one that was requested, but I was unable to furnish one at that time because we had not had any meetings.
Right.
So this time around, I was asked again, and so I produced a report, and I figure it goes through the county,
all the channels.
Yeah,
perfect.
But I don't know the process
perfect.
For that. So I'm more than happy to allow that process to take place because that's the first thing I thought of was like, This is just going to be filed in a report without anyone reviewing it or editing it?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. We definitely, yes, given our refresher today of the Brown Act, we definitely want to make sure that we have adequate time internally from all parties, the report that's coming from your end, bringing it to us, making sure that everyone had a chance to look, revise, agree, and then obviously include it in the agenda packet and make sure that we post it in adequate time, right? So given that, yes, you had a very short turnaround.
Yeah.
On behalf of our VSO, Eric, I did want to add, he had a chance to review. Unfortunately, he could not join us today as he is conducting a staff training, an all-day staff training, and he is the trainer. So didn't want to pull him away from that. But I did want to review specifically on the notes that were submitted for the ad hoc metrics meeting dated March 5th. Of 24. One of the things that we would like to add to that is, number one, thank you for the time and all the wonderful questions and the fruitful discussions that was happening, that had happened during that meeting. That meeting was more focused on, not so much focused on the metrics per se and data specific, but it was more gaining a better understanding of what the VSO's office dynamics, organization, and kind of the flow of business and work that is done. So wanted to add that. And within the first bullet, under the VSO reported that there's 10 claims representative. We did want to add that during that discussion. There were simultaneous questions being discussed about the structure of the VSO. What does that look like? How many staff members? So, and definitely what the role of the VSO director is in addition to that. So, yes, definitely clarifying that we do have 10 veterans claims representative positions, and those positions are the staff that actually do the claims filing, submitting. But it doesn't mean that all are currently accredited, and it doesn't mean that all positions are filled. So through the course of just business, of course, as we onboard new staff and we train them and we get them through proper state training and accreditation testing, that sometimes can be a changing environment where we might have, for example, right now, only 4 that are certified to file claims, more are in the works in training and making sure we go through that process. So we wanted to get the opportunity to do that. And of course, I know for myself, I am fairly, I can't really say new anymore, right? Because it's been 14 months. But for myself as the director of the VSO, I handle the higher level executive planning, development, anything that comes at county levels in planning decisions and working with our division, of course, leadership, our county leaderships, and of course, some of our community partners or opportunities for partnership. So really handle the higher level duties and support, of course, the operations and planning of the VSO on our day-to-day and service delivery of our office. So I wanted to add that there. Also, towards the end of those notes, I want to say, second from the last bullet, in terms of the critical vulnerability to better understand the way the VSO works is the lack of the organizational chart. That goes back to the same as, yes, we do have an organizational chart that's specific to the Veterans Service Office. And in that chart, of course, it has your director, just specific to the VSO. Our director, our VSO, which is our Veterans Service Officer, Eric Ensley, if you've met. And then, of course, from there, our staff, our supervisors and our staff that support our front desk. So that is available. The conversation was really regarding that structure, how to best understand how we all come together, and better to understand too on then which one of those staff are the ones that do claims and that we potentially use that information to report out on our Big Voice newsletter. That data that you see on the newsletter in regards to like how many claims we filed, these are those claims and work that are completed respectively with the staff that are able to submit that type of work. So wanted to add that. And then the last clarification, really, that in the next meeting, I believe there's still some follow-up, another pending meeting to further discuss and get a better understanding of the VSO. Wanted to add the clarification that I believe in the notes it captured the understanding, the inner workings of how a claim is developed and how a fully developed claim is processed. One of the clarifications we'd like to add to that is it's more our VSO wants to make a, we would like to propose a presentation instead of going into the very complex nature of sometimes filing claims or what type of claims and benefits that our veterans may be eligible and or entitled to, that the best way to capture hopefully the goals and better understanding is to do a presentation, an overview of the VSO, the services, the type of services, the types of claims, what that process looks like, and of course, how do we fit into the network of with the state, with the California Department, with Veterans Affairs, and how that all that comes together. So we definitely wanted to place that clarification on those notes. But other than that, that is all I have. We are, in terms of what's happening within the VSO, I don't know if any of you have had an opportunity to go into the appointment system. We have updated our internal process and database and how we capture our appointments. So that is flowing as best as possible and mitigating any kind of hiccups that we've done. So we're taking a little bit more internal hands-on control on that process so that we can best set appointments respectively on what type of appointment it is and then how much time appropriately, how much time needed. So we're very happy to report that that's going quite smooth, definitely helping us with triaging our appointments and getting individuals seen a much shorter time frame, and including triaging our walk-ins. Everyone that comes in is able to be serviced, regardless of they need to meet with a veterans claims rep or just be serviced by our support staff at the front. Sometimes maybe even our veteran service officer, depends on what the issue they come forth with. So wanted to give those great news. And then the other thing that we're working behind the scenes is updating our college fee waiver, because the academic school year season is coming up, and our veterans accessing college fee waiver program are going to start applying for that for the next academic school year, in addition to their dependents, of course, and students. So working on getting some of those updates. So if you visit the website here in the next, I'm going to say, month or so, we're working on making some updates along that way to better inform our college fee waiver individuals on changes that have come up in terms of income levels and, of course, how to apply. We do have an online portal that has made it much more efficient for anyone to apply for that, that meets those eligibility criteria to apply, which makes it so much easier for us to electronically download all that information, review their application, and then turn around and do the process that we need to submit to the state. So wanted to give that update because that is coming. So you'll see that. Other than that, that is all the updates that I have.
All right, thank you, Claudia.
Yeah.
Any questions for Claudia?
I've got two. Claudia, the first is about the action minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see action minutes in this agenda, or in this agenda action minutes from our January 10th meeting. I thought we had agreed to do that. Did I miss them?
The minutes weren't provided because they were provided through email.
Okay.
Because they were, you guys had requested them for maybe a week or two after the meeting, so that way it would better prepare you for this one.
Okay. And then the other question I had was about the appointment system. So I was actually in it today. I have a case that I did with the VSO a year ago in March, so I wanted to check up on it. And so I scheduled online, and so I see that there's a new interface for the online appointments. I noticed that all the appointments available, whether they were virtual, phone, or in person, those three options all opened April 30th.
Yeah, they're like 6 weeks plus.
Is that basically where we're at in scheduled appointments, or is that
So now
what we have to do it online. I just wanted to get a sense of that.
No, so each respective meeting that you or a reason for the appointment you want to set, it will give you what is open and available. However, we now have a better control in going in there and adding additional appointments, as well as we triage like cancellations, reschedules, and things like that. So appointments, you might, for example, you might go in there today and let's say the next available in person is March 30th. And or there's nothing sooner than March 30th, let's just say. However, we have some cancellations. We have adequate time to go in there and release them. So we will release them once we get that notice from any veteran that's, you know, need to change their appointment. So you might check back the next day or later that afternoon and you find that, oh, yes, there's an appointment available. So it just ebbs and flows depending on all the moving, triaging, reschedules.
So the one thing we've asked again and again about, and I know that we talked about putting it on the website, is there are a number of veterans who will have to respond to a claims decision in a specified amount of time. They don't have six weeks. I'm happy to wait 6 weeks for the next available appointment. That's fine. But I think we've talked about adding something to the website that specifically says, if you are, you know, if you have a time requirement that requires to be seen soon, please call it. Like, there's nothing suggesting to a veteran that if there's an emergency, they can get seen. And I might add, I'm appreciative that you're doing such a brisk walk-up business, that a walk-in business. That's great. But you're not. That it's not suggesting that if you've got those time critical issues, that you should walk in. So if we could add that to the website, it would be an enormous help.
Thank you, Stephanie, for that comment. We'll take a look at it. We definitely want to promote our walk-ins and for things that are a little bit more urgent, time-sensitive, definitely do that. And, of course, our telephone, because we can always do something over the phone to where we're having to help that veteran not have to come in person. But we'll take a look at that language and how it stands. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Anything else for Claudia? Seeing none, let's go on to our CalVet link update. Ben?
It's like 21.3 or 21.8. I don't know. It's significant increase.
It is.
Yeah, because the national poverty level was ridiculous for Californians. So it's huge. It means I don't have to pay for the last year of grad school. God. Thank CalVet. Exactly.
Yay. And I wanted to highlight a pretty big initiative that CalVet needs of women matter, the experiences of women. I was at the Fullerton Women Veterans in Higher Education at the beginning of the month, which is a wonderful. Another topic right at the really beginning. So that's great, and then I guess just to follow up on that. event. And another exceptional. In February, at the Elks. Who kind of reminded me couldn't even believe I said it yesterday. At that one event at Golden.
And one of them was her former veteran that she helped. So she's amazing.
Okay, any questions for Ben? And then, all right, Alana, you will do OC4 Vets update. Alana Rundy, please. Thank you, Alana. Any questions for Alana? All right, thank you. And our we have two standing committees and one ad hoc committee. So our communications standing committee. No, John, any comments?
No report, but I'd like to get there's a lot of good information.
Okay. And why don't we go on to event outreach standing committee? And you'll speak with for Michael. John?
What's that?
Did you have comments regarding this?
About this report?
Events Outreach Steering Committee.
One of the things that, just taking a look at it, is one of the things we struggle with is just the communication, you know, what we can do. And to the and to the public, you know, I appreciate Michael really looking at this, but it's really part of some specific channels, particularly the use. What are the things going on in being able to personally, whenever I receive something, I push it to our
okay, and I had a comment about the big voice. So online right now, you start off with January 22, and you have four pages of about 16 reports per page, I believe it was. February 2022, there's no data for big voice on there. So although you start January of 2022, if we could get that information, I don't need it posted. I just need that because in the metrics ad hoc committee, I would appreciate that data from February 2022. And the other comment is that from January 22 until January 23, you had three items for that you tracked. You had veterans served, you had claims filed, and then you had benefits awarded. And then starting February of 2023 until today, you've added a new one, which is this college fee waiver.
College fee waiver, yeah.
And that was because the college fee waiver prior was very staff
intensive.
Yeah. And it's been made easier, so now we're tracking that better. So that's good information. So I just like to see that continue on, and then we're going to slice and dice that data. And what's going to happen is that data is going to tell us a story. But what's important is to know what was the staffing level those months of when it peaked, you know, or what else we can explain about that data, such as, well, all of a sudden you just mentioned, Claudia, that next month is going to be kind of a big time for college
fee waivers.
Mm-hmm. Fee waivers.
We'll see.
So then we'll see that rise to 1.5 million being given out. And then there's other times where it's only 300,000 given out. Well, why is that? Well, because that's the semester cycle. Yeah. So we need that data to understand what the metrics is telling us. Right? So if you could, so we already understand about why we started tracking college fee waivers and when we didn't previously, but if we could know what was the staffing level on each month since January of 2022,
good luck.
What was your staffing level?
Yes. Is that part of the ad hoc discussion?
That's what I'm going to get to, but right now I was just talking about the big voice of what the data mm-hmm. is telling us right now, but understanding what the data is telling us is important. You know, and we can explain that away mm-hmm. by saying, okay, well, these are the spikes in college fee waivers because of the semester system or whatever else. But we'll give that to you and let you help us to identify that. All right, and then the other aspect of this was under committees was the metrics committee, ad hoc, and Eric's provided us two reports. Before I ask for that information on that, once again, I just wanted to say that the being able to explain away the data by having how many service officers we had and how many were certified would be helpful in explaining the data. Is that something you can do?
That's definitely something we can have a discussion on the next ad hoc committee meeting because sure. From the previous one, I think that's where the focus on maybe having a better understanding of the workflow exactly. and the structure then will help best understand the data. And that's definitely something we can continue to talk about, how also we can then update you on when we have the big voice on the data that we have been reporting now. Sure. The college fee waiver has always been there, but you are correct in saying that depending on the season, how many applications, that kind of dips, that kind of goes up. As we begin or get prepared for the academic year, then that saving shoots up tremendously because we're processing lots of applications. So I think having that level of this is what the data means and this is why sometimes it dips, sometimes it, you know, goes up, looking at just some of those trends. And that can be potentially, we can explore in doing that verbally since we share the big voice. We're always a month behind. So if the big voice that's coming, that we're preparing right now, it's all year February data. So when we present it to you and we share it with you, one of the things we can potentially look at is, as I see it here, then I can report on some of the trends. On why those numbers, right? College fee waiver, or we have a little dip because we are seeing less of whatever, you know, type of claims and more of a disability or pensions. So those kinds of things we can verbally explain if that is helpful.
Okay, Eric,
we can continue to discuss that during your ad hoc meeting.
No, come on.
Yes. So. Explain, not explain away, but explain and better understand the data, right? That's the critical part of this. And the other thing, too, is not just advocating for veterans, but advocating for the VSO. Like, do we need more? Where can we find it in a budget? How do we get the supervisors to jump on board with that as well? So it's not, it's multifaceted, but the big one is trying to understand what happens, you know, how the workflow is, what the cycle is, how many certified people we have, what is the training program. It was eye-opening that, you know, Eric was telling us about how long it takes to train someone, and I knew it took a long time, but it was like, wow, okay. And so we looked at the big voice. We did math on, you know, in our meeting, like 11 claims a day.
Yeah.
That's a lot. I mean, that's important to note, and depending on, you know, what types of claims these are, so we can go back to not only our constituents, but also to the supervisors and go, hey, they need more, they need this, whatever it is. So it's helpful to understand that. So really, really appreciate Eric making the time and getting that scheduled and talking with us and answering our questions. Very, very good, very insightful. Really helps me, I know Stephen too. It was quite a bit of eye-opening stuff. It's some Herculean efforts are being made in your office. And then I will go back and, of course, shamelessly plug, I beat up you guys for so long on the digitalization of the college fee waiver. It is a very happy accomplishment for you guys. It's such an amazing thing, and it was so difficult, but I'm an IT guy now. And so I was like, we do this at work. We do this with our veterans benefits. You can do this too. And I'm so glad that the office was receptive to that and changed that process. And that was, you know, part of the dialogue here and better understanding of who you're serving. And also how we can accomplish that goal. And I think that there's all added bonus because now you got those claims folks off of college fee waivers, and now they can do the heavy lifting, and they're doing it. So, yeah, that's all I got.
All right, and then I had a question about, okay, so these veterans license plates, for example, that doesn't seem that is that the DMV is, that's a role of the DMV. You guys are assisting with that, but isn't that an administrative function? I mean, why would you have a VSO engaged in that?
Our office does assist with those, with the application. We understand that many of our veterans, that can be a task for various different factors. So it doesn't mean that it would be necessarily at the level of a veterans claims representative, let's say, away from a claim that might be leading to some form of compensation. But we will triage that with our front desk staff, maybe sometimes supervisors, or if we have a cancellation and our claims representative happens to have a little bit of some time there, they'll pull in and they will assist as well. So our claims representatives don't necessarily handle all of those appointments, but it isn't an office effort.
Okay, Bobby?
The other thing, too, is you said license plates. It's a license. It's the license itself.
Driver's license.
It's a driver's license.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, and that's a partnership we have with the motor vehicles.
Yeah.
Okay. Because that way, that's pretty much a veteran process.
It is.
You really are a veteran.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes a difference. I don't know if you have it on yours or not, but if you don't, it makes a difference when you go through the airports and stuff because it says veterans on it. Okay. Or if you need to go to work or get some, well, not work, but if you go to Home Depot or something, it's on your driver's license. It makes a big, big difference.
Sure. Ben?
Yes.
And special disabled for veterans with 100% use of mobility device. How many phone calls I get for people who need clarification. But nonetheless, one option is for the VSO to stamp that VSE-001 for veterans.
Hmm.
Thank goodness the state.
Yeah.
All right, and then any other questions regarding our reports? I just want to make sure that and specifically Claudia, that you have a clear understanding of, and we discussed this with Eric. The goal of the ad hoc committee for specifically towards metrics, right, is so that we could understand it, me and Eric, and that we could explain it to not only our colleagues on the committee, but also out in the community, right? So that we could all become advocates out in the community of what these numbers mean and why is it high this month and why is it low this month. So we would appreciate an overview and a presentation regarding your office and what you do, but that would be months after we're done with our metrics report out. And the reason for that is that everything that you do in your office is going to be more clear to us on how we can assist, because our role is to assist. It's not to hammer down on you and provide some type of oversight and be this group of people that you answer to. You don't answer to us. You answer to the Board of Supervisors, certainly. Our goal is to assist you. And if we have a better understanding of what the numbers mean and what your needs are, we're in a better position, hopefully because we're on this board because of, you know, some significance that we are standing that we have in our own communities and that we're recognized that we could assist you. So do you understand that? Is that fair enough that that's coming from me telling you that?
So the purpose of your advisory council, as you mentioned, is, and I want to go beyond saying assist, you really are the eyes and ears for the community, right? You're in your community of veterans, and you're bringing forth information for them, resources. And some of those resources will include, we have a veteran service office in Orange County that can help you with A, B, C, D, E, and anything in between. Because on top of that, and Ben, you mentioned a good point, even though we might assist day in and day out with all the veterans license designations, we also assist with a lot of supportive services, right? Referrals that if, let's say, we have a veteran who is aging, an older veteran that needs supportive services, and linking them and appropriately sending them to and connecting them with the appropriate resources, including our mental health partners with OC for Vets as well. So it really, your purpose and function, it really is to be that eyes and ears and that advocate in your community. But being those eyes and ears means you are the eyes and ears. If you're hearing that there are some challenges, barriers, needs for services, information forthcoming in your communities, that you make those recommendations to us and advise us, a particular community area needs more information on ABC, and that we can then take a look at internally on how best we can assist with that and bringing forth the information and go from there. In regards to the metrics, we want to be mindful of how much information is too much information, let's say, for the public to know, in terms of do they need to know why, for example, during college fee waiver, it goes up and it goes down. What we want the community to know is that they can come to us, that they can come to us to get service, and then we can, you know, take it from there and guide them and provide the appropriate counseling. So we want to be mindful as we're trying to develop through your ad hoc and what information is helpful for you to understand. It's also information that will help you in your community to say, okay, these are the times of claims. This is the data. This is how much you're helping. Not necessarily they have, staff members.
So Claudia, you perhaps I didn't say it right. So let me rephrase, okay? Because that's the exact point that I'm trying to get you to believe and trust, okay? Which I feel there's a reluctance, okay? And let me restate, okay? I don't want you to tell me what I need to know or how I'm to decipher data. We're going to figure that out as a board, and we're going to commit to you that we're going to be advocates for you and for your staffing levels and for your office, because that's our role, right? But don't tell us what the data or what you're going to give me. If we ask for something, I have an expectation that you're going to provide it so that we could then be in a position to help you and help your office. Is that fair enough?
This is a collaborative effort, definitely. Correct. Working together so that we can also help you with understanding exactly what that data means and how does that help you when you're in the community.
Yes, because you can make data say anything you want, and you can explain it away any way you want to, right? But us understanding it would be a starting point. And then you've given us a presentation about all the other stuff. Excellent. That you guys do, then we'll be in a better position to understand everything. Is that fair enough? Is that all okay with that?
All said.
Okay, thank you. All right, so let's get back, and because we are over our goal time, so council comments. I'll start with Bobby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. a couple things. We happen to have had the second annual Women's Veterans Symposium at the VFW for the county and Los Angeles County this weekend. We doubled the number of women veterans that showed up this year. And we talked about two of the campaigns. We passed out information on the program there to let everybody know about the survey from CalVet. And then also I managed to bring back with me from my trip to Washington, D.C. with the veterans thing. There's a big program now called I'm Not Invisible. This is a campaign for women veterans that's now out there. And they've got posters and stuff, and I managed to decorate the room with all those posters and stuff. So it was pretty neat, and kind of made a video of it. I don't know if I'm allowed to send a video out because it doesn't say we can send information out, but that's all right. I'll do it on my own. But that was a pretty neat campaign. The young lady, Lourdes Taglo, who's in charge of women veterans, The Center for Women Veterans back in D.C. has got data that's unbelievable we didn't have 3 years ago on women veterans. It's really, really impressive. And again, I have access to that PowerPoint that she made. In fact, she broke it down to the number of women veterans that have names on VA hospitals. I mean, that's how deep this is. The other thing, too, was we're looking at having the big this weekend, we're going to have our big annual dinner for the VFW, for the community, for fire and police and EMTs and the Scouts, Voice of Democracy, all that. So that'll be happening this week. So, and that's all I have, Mr. Chair.
That's Newport?
No, heck no. There's just Anaheim, man. We don't have to go all the way out to Newport to get things done. Okay. 3173, not 291. Over.
Okay. John, what do you got? Comments? And Eric, any comments?
Just that I attended that CalTEP event, and it was at Golden West College. It was a very good event, very well attended. So it was nice to get out there and see all the veterans coming to use those resources, and then kind of listen to them talk over in their. They served food, so just kind of being a fly on the wall and listening to their satisfaction level with those services, and they seem to be very happy that we're doing that. So it's good.
And Stephanie?
I'll just say that this is the second year I attended. I believe you've been doing it for 3 years, Bobby?
Two and a half, yeah.
So that Women's Veterans event is really great every year, coincide with Women's History Month. And I did fill out my my survey. So if you know, I'll take it on my own to make sure that Alexis does hers. But if if everybody here could think if they know one female veteran that lives in California and ask them to fill that out, that would be a help. Mm-hmm.
All right, and then my comment was, so Eric Maslin is sent us an email that he's going to be just due to work commitments. Eric, I'm sorry. I've got enough Erics.
Too many Erics.
Too many Alexes. Both
Alex. So what, is he appointed by a supervisor, or is he an at-large member?
I think he's at large.
I think, yeah, he started out as appointed and went to at large.
Yeah, I think he's at
I
large.
Believe he's out large. I'll need to double check.
Okay. The supervisors, they leave their positions blank for many months at times. So we all know veterans, and particularly if it's an at large position, if you can make some recommendations and send them up through Alexis, and we'll get them back to Monica and then to Claudia, of course, to help us vet that, but that would be fantastic. Particularly if there's an area of the county that where we're at, if there's a hole, we should focus on that area. Good to go, everybody? All right, any other comments from staff? Steve Rounds? And Jose, we'll have staff reach out to you, and thank you for staying this long. I hope it wasn't too...
educational.
Good. All right, with that, I'll close the meeting. At 16:17.
Thank you, sir.
All right, good. Good meeting.
It's frustrating because it says right there we're supposed to disseminate.